This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In the face of the advice I have that I should not be responding to speculation, conjecture, allegations, or even so-called revelations, I will not right now be responding to all these matters that have been raised around this.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa declining again to provide details to Parliament about a major theft at his farm that went unreported for 2 years. Details coming up. Also, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization warns global hunger is likely to increase due to uncertainties created by the war in Ukraine. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Vatican says a torn knee ligament has forced Pope Francis to indefinitely postpone his planned July 2nd to the 7th trip to the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan. A statement said the postponement was made with regret at the request of the Pope's doctors to avoid jeopardizing his therapy. The knee injury has forced the 85-year-old pontiff to use a wheelchair for the last month or so. The Vatican did not say if the Pope's schedule, July 24 to 30, trip to Canada, would be affected as well. Despite his ailment, the Pope has been keeping up a regular schedule of audiences. He had four meetings today, including one with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Prince Charles and wife Camilla will attend the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting late this month, their first ever visit to Rwanda. Only 10 days remain till the summit begins. Eugene Uwimana has more details on the story.
The news of the impending visit was announced in an official statement from Karen's house as Kigali put the final touches on preparations to welcome the 500 participants expected to attend the CHOGM meeting. The statement quotes Charles as saying, "My wife and I much look forward to meeting Commonwealth leaders and for the first time being able to visit Rwanda. With the theme of delivering a common future, connecting, innovating, transforming, the June 2025 meeting will focus on the major challenges and opportunities facing Commonwealth countries, climate change, support of biodiversity and the regeneration of land, economic development, opportunities for the young and gender equality." Banners, flyers and other branding materials already are waving on newly built roads and hotels. Joe Lomas, the UK Commonwealth Envoy, is satisfied with the preparations.
"I can confirm that all is set. Now, obviously, this is for Rwanda to fully decide. I've discussed with officials today, and they are very well prepared, as always, and we are now starting to talk about the detail of CHOGM and what we want to come out of it."
President Paul Kagame says all efforts have been deployed to make the meeting a success.
"We'll be wanting to make everybody feel this is an extension of their home, and there will be ikaze in our language, which is a form of welcome."
CHOGM was planned for Kigali in June 2020, but was postponed twice due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Rwanda is the second African country to host it after Uganda in 2007. Analysts say the attendance of Prince Charles means a lot, as during the 2018 CHOGM in the UK, Commonwealth leaders formally announced that he would succeed the Queen as head of the Commonwealth. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Eleven military police were killed in northern Burkina Faso yesterday. An army statement says armed men attacked a security post in Seitenga in Burkina Faso's Seno province. The gendarmes fought back but were outnumbered. The West African country is battling militant groups, some linked to the Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. These groups have been waging an insurgency which has killed thousands across Burkina Faso and neighboring Mali and Niger. Also yesterday, the army says 4 military police were killed in an attack in the western province of Kosi, and 2 people were killed in an attack on a gold mine in the country's north. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization warns global hunger is likely to increase because of soaring food prices due largely to uncertainties created by the war in Ukraine. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Food and Agriculture Organization's latest Food Outlook report forecasts international food prices will hit record highs this year, lifting global import payments to more than $1.8 trillion. The FAO says economically vulnerable people in the least developed countries in sub-Saharan Africa and net importing developing countries will suffer most from food insecurity due to rising costs. The director of the FAO's Markets and Trade Division, Boubacar Ben Belhassan, says the tightening of markets is expected to persist for all commodities this year. He attributes that to steep price hikes, the frequency and intensity of extreme weather events, market uncertainties due to the war in Ukraine, and sudden trade policy changes.
This year's food security crisis is about access. Next year, because of the expected or the lack of availability and the higher costs of inputs, in particular for fertilizer and fuel, the concern could be about lack of availability, in other words, lack of food.
The FAO reports enough food is available to feed the hungry this year, but it is not getting to the people who need it. Ben Belhassan says both Ukraine and Russia are major producers of commodities such as wheat, maize, and sunflower oil. But the war in Ukraine, he notes, is preventing those commodities from being exported to countries in greatest need.
From our estimation, we see that depending on how much this shock leads in terms of deficit or gap or reduction in the export availability for those food commodities from both Ukraine and Russia, it could lead in anywhere between 11 to 19 million more hungry people, but that's chronic hunger for 2022-2023.
The World Food Program warns of an impending catastrophe and mass starvation if Russia does not end its blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. The United Nations currently is trying to find a so-called package deal to allow Ukrainian-produced food to be safely and securely exported through the Black Sea. The deal also would allow for unimpeded access to global markets for Russian food and fertilizers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Culminating a year-long diplomatic spat, Algeria has suspended a 20-year-old friendship treaty with Spain, which committed the two countries to cooperate in controlling migration flows and banned all non-gas trade. Spain, which depends partly on Algeria for natural gas, said it regrets the actions and will firmly defend its national interests. Algeria was angered when Spain said in March it supported a Moroccan plan to offer autonomy to Western Sahara. William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, discussed these latest developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
So there are several aspects of it. First of all, Algeria's main problem is with Morocco, not with Spain. And Algeria broke off relations with Morocco last August in response to a lot of needling from Morocco diplomatically, economically, and otherwise as a result of an increasingly bold position following the U.S. Recognition of Moroccan claims associated with the Abraham Accords. And after that, there's been a whole series of tit-for-tat moves between Morocco and Algeria, and this should be included in that context. Each of the steps Algeria took are important. The cutting off of the friendship treaty relates in many respects to migration, and it's a signaling from Algeria to Spain that you have a new agreement with Morocco based in part on migration pressure that Morocco had been putting on Spain. So what Morocco had been doing was periodically allowing migrants to rush by the thousands into the Spanish enclave in northern Morocco, in Ceuta. And this created a migration crisis in that Spanish territory adjacent to Moroccan soil on the African continent. So that was solved when Spain recognized Morocco's claims, and then they had a new migration treaty worked out. And Algeria is saying, well, we're no longer going to cooperate with you on migration. In terms of imports, Algeria is Spain's third largest market for agricultural and manufactured outputs. So there's a lot of important exports that could really damage the Spanish economy. So these are significant acts, not just symbolic acts. And Algeria is basically saying to Spain, well, you want a better relationship with Morocco, but that gives you a worse relationship with Algeria, which will really impact your bottom line.
Spain's energy minister, Teresa Ribera, was confident Algeria's gas company, Sonatrach, would respect its commercial contracts, supplying Spain with nearly half of its gas imports. But she acknowledged that the spat between the two countries comes at a delicate time, as the prices of the 10-year supply contracts are now being revised by the companies involved. Would Algeria use the diplomatic spat to review prices for any new gas contract with Spanish firms?
Yes and no. Algeria's been studiously trying to separate its diplomatic and economic row with Spain from the existing gas contracts for several reasons, including that with the rise in oil prices related to the Russia-Ukraine war, means that Algeria is making money hand over fist, and it's able to sell much more to Europe. And it wants to demonstrate to Europe that it's a reliable hydrocarbon partner. And so there will be pressure to inflict pain on Spain on the margins, possibly. But if it sets the price too high for Spain, it signals that Algeria is an unreliable energy partner. And that's the main relationship that it has with Europe. So it wants to be seen dependable and predictable. And I think that will place a downward pressure on the prices, you know, back towards something more agreeable for European customers.
The Spanish government said Spain will firmly defend its national interests in the wake of Algeria's decision. What does that mean?
That means that Spain's not going to revise its position vis-a-vis Morocco, which was already causing it a lot of pain and was solved by the new Spanish position towards Morocco. But that just because it will firmly defend its national interests, meaning it's not going to change its agreement with Morocco because Algeria put pressure on it. That doesn't mean that Spain won't try to find other ways to smooth over this diplomatic row. There's a long history of Morocco and Algeria putting pressure on Europeans to come to their side of the Western Sahara dispute, and then periods of boycotts back and forth of various kinds, withdrawals of ambassadors, not pursuing agreements. But then usually things can be renegotiated and reset on a positive path. So I expect over time that Spain will have some success in repairing its relationship with Algeria. But in the short term, no. In the short term, I think Spain's taken the most pro-Moroccan position in Europe on the Western Sahara issue, and they're not going to back down from it.
That was William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington. He was speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. We have a note. We have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa refused today to give parliamentarians further details on what transpired on February 2020 when thieves allegedly stole $4 million from his farm in Limpopo province. Ramaphosa had been expected to elaborate to questions yesterday from legislators following his budget speech. His appearance today was marred again by interruptions, shouting, and ejection of members. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Parliamentarians from the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, who were ejected yesterday for disrupting Ramaphosa's address, were back today, but with no intention of allowing him to speak.
Any member who is interfering, where are men, the security person, the
account to protect and
however, the Speaker Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngagula seemed ready for the resistance, calling Parliament security personnel to forcibly remove them one by one until all of them were gone.
I won't allow them to happen now anymore.
allow them to participate.
I've ruled,
like all of us are allowed.
I've ruled. Are you Matokwe, honorable member, will you please leave the chamber? Sergeant at Arms, will you please assist her to leave the chamber?
Ramaphosa had to be temporarily escorted out of the house, but when he returned, he seemed unmoved by the resistance.
I know that I'm in a very dangerous position.
Then he made it clear he won't comment further on the issue.
In the face of the advice I have that I should not be responding to speculation, conjecture, allegations, or even so-called revelations, I will not right now be responding to all these matters that have been raised around this.
While Ramaphosa has denied any wrongdoing on the matter, stating that the money came from sales from his cakely and game business, there is widespread speculation that the matter will be used by enemies in his own party to stop him from seeking a second term. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Kofi Olomide is one of Africa's greatest living legends in music. With over 400 songs and 30 albums to his name, he has defined Congolese music and dance culture from the earliest days of the Congolese rumba sensation to the present. He is a songwriter, a singer with a trademark voice of incredible range and powerful bass register, as well as band leader and producer. Heather Maxwell, host of VOA's Music Time in Africa, spoke with him earlier this week at VOA Studios in Washington to learn more about his recent activities that take him on new paths in life.
You have just been appointed cultural ambassador for Congo. You're also a diplomat and have recently received the African Legend Award from AFRIMA 2021. These are just recent accomplishments. What do you plan to do with your ambassadorship?
Well, I will be in a bell to explain everything I want to do in English. You know, I'm a Frenchman.
Yes.
My English is like
It's okay. You can speak it in French if you like.
J'ai commencé ma mission d'ambassadeur.
I started my mission as an ambassador going to Belgium, the country that colonized Congo, because I wanted, as an ambassador of Congolese culture, to ask Belgium to repatriate the musical instrument and the artwork that Belgium took from Congo during the colonization. There are about 8,000 musical instruments that Belgium has at its Gervais Museum. It's an immense wealth. And also an incalculable number of art objects there on exhibit. It's a fight that started before me, but I decided to ask the Belgian government politely to repatriate to Congo as a compensation for all that we have lost culturally and build a museum worthy of its name to exhibit our object there. But Mr. Guido, who is the director of the museum in Devon, said, "Yes, but Kofi, you are nice. You have come nicely. The politicians who came before you were aggressive and threatening. But with you, we feel that we can dialogue. But we want to alert you that Congo is taken with Belgium because we are its old colonizer. But in Washington, there are more than 15,000 musical instruments there. So one day I'm going to ask the boss, the number one, the chief of state, to bring me here and meet with the Americans so that America can also repatriate that and build us a museum. Also, the Congolese rumba has become intangible cultural heritage. It has this title. And I'm going to ask the Congolese Senate and the Congolese Parliament to adopt a law that the history of the rumba becomes a subject taught in our schools. This amongst all the steps that I've started to make. But I revealed that at the conference, there are 5 acts in total, but these are the 2 that I've started.
En parlant de la rumba, is soukous or ndombolo still the number one music genre dansant in Congo?
In Africa.
You think?
Yes.
Yes, but before that, there was mutuashi, folk dance coming from country, the provinces, from our ancestors. There is makwandungu. There was mbonga, folk dances, coming from villages of our fathers and our grandfathers. And then, to not stop the fun, There was Sukus, Ndombolo, there's Chacho. All those are variants. Oh, look, he's dancing already over there. So there are variants. It's like the supermarket, right? One finds shelves of cheese, but it's all the same supermarket.
You don't see that any other styles may eclipse?
No, ça va continuer.
No, it will continue. No one can stop culture. No one can stop intelligence. No one can stop creativity. It will continue to surface our territories, from our forests, from our villages. It will continue. No, it won't stop. Because our kids, today the music that's made, there is little color that comes from the West, from America, but that mixes with the African Congolese roots.
You can hear more of Heather Maxwell's conversation with Kofi Olomide at Music Time in Africa on voaafrica.com. You also can keep up with all the latest music news on the continent with Heather on Facebook and Twitter.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
These are unprecedented times, declared Secretary of State Antony Blinken at the United Nations International Migration Review Forum. There are some 95 million migrants on the move around the world, more than at any time since World War II. As people leave their homes in search of safety and opportunity, undertaking perilous journeys, it's critical that countries and institutions work together to make migration safer and more orderly, stressed Secretary Blinken. Forging a common approach to managing migration and protecting vulnerable people is the intention of the Global Compact for Migration. The compact is the first intergovernmentally negotiated agreement under the auspices of the United Nations, covering all dimensions of international migration in a holistic and comprehensive manner. The United States seeks migration policies that are grounded in human rights, human dignity, transparency, and state sovereignty, said Secretary Blinken. And we're committed to partnering with civil society, with governments, the private sector, and international institutions like the United Nations, because this is a challenge that no one of us can solve alone. Several Global Compact countries in the Western Hemisphere have led the way by providing legal status and services to people fleeing repression and made education available to their children. International organizations and non-governmental groups are providing support after climate-related disasters and training local officials in climate resilience and adaptation to help communities that are now threatened with being displaced because of the climate crisis. The United States will work closely with its partners to build on the progress that's being made. In June, at the Summit of the Americas, we'll continue developing a collaborative response to irregular migration throughout our hemisphere, where the issue is particularly acute, said Secretary Blinken. Together, we're working on the root causes of irregular migration, including a lack of economic opportunity, insecurity, corruption, and repressive governance, climate-related emergencies, to address why people are leaving their homes in the first place. The U.S. is also working to expand legal pathways for migration, including allocating more than 50,000 additional temporary worker visas this year, expanding family reunification programs, and funding support for vulnerable migrants and refugees around the globe. The United States will continue to work for safe, orderly, and humane migration around the world. As a nation built and enriched by immigrants, this issue is particularly close to our hearts.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Justin Twait, thanks for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.